podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, May 24th, 2020. This is episode 1698. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from the TWiT LastPass studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of The Tech Guy is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Learn the ins and outs of IT careers and get the most up-to-date training with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/TWiT for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. Use the code TWIT30 at checkout. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk smartphones. We talk smartwatches. We talk augmented reality, virtual reality. We talk real reality. 8888-ASK. Leo's the phone number. Anything with a chip in it. That's what we talk about. Technology. 888-827-5536. If you want to talk tech with me, if you have a question or an idea or a suggestion, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. I'd love to hear from you at any time. You know, you just give me a ring, give me a jingle, and we'll talk. Our conversation, I should warn you, will be broadcast live over the radio and recorded for later listening and playback at techguylabs.com, our website, techguylabs.com. Also, the notes will be taken. My scribe, James DeRuvo. Hello, James. James DeRuvo will be writing everything down as you speak, as you ask, as I answer, and put it up there for posterity at techguylabs.com. Here's the nice thing. There's no sign up. There's no fee. There's no subscription. I will not spam you with newsletters every day. I don't have time. Nobody got time for that. No. The GDPR, which I am basically in favor of, the European General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, which affects all Europeans, all people living in the EU, has all sorts of features. But one you probably noticed a lot lately, you know, when you go to a website and there's that little pop-up that says, this site uses cookies, okay? And you click okay, and it's like, why do they keep asking me that? By the way, here's a funny thing. Here's a humorous little note. If you say no to that, it'll keep asking you. Because how does it know whether you've said yes or no? It saves a cookie. That's what cookies are. They're, for the most part, pretty benign. It was a little bit of a overreach to say, oh, you got to warn people if you use cookies. All cookies are the settings for your site. That's why they were created. Cookies are really called persistent client-side state information. They should have called them pixies. I don't know why they didn't. Would have been nicer. Cookies, that's cute though, right? Yeah. The idea is when you go to a website, it remembers where you left off. If you go to Facebook, you don't want to log in every single time. So when you log in, it saves your login information as a cookie and says, well, this person is this person and it's on your computer. It's not, they don't save it. They save it on your computer. And that way you can go back to Facebook and not have to log in each time. Any site where you've logged in once but don't have to re-log in is using cookies. Cookies are really mostly benign. The only reason they've gotten a bad name is there are some people who use cookies to kind of track your travels on the web. And the way that works, you know, well, for instance, Facebook. So when Facebook, you log in, it sets a cookie. That is a Facebook cookie that says who you are, basically. It's a token. It's attached to your identity. And it's useful every time you go to Facebook. That's a first-party cookie where you're on the site and it's the cookie set by the site. First-party cookie. The concept of third-party cookies exists. So if I go to Starbucks, there on my computer there's a Facebook cookie. It is illegal. according to the World Wide Web Consortium or somebody. I mean, they're not going to throw you in jail. But it's not – the cookies are not – third-party cookies are not supposed to be read. Facebook can't read its cookie when you're at the Starbucks site unless the Starbucks site has a Facebook like button on it or anything, any content from Facebook on it, because that content gets loaded from Facebook servers and suddenly that third-party Facebook cookie is now a first-party cookie again because content's being loaded for Facebook. And when it's being loaded from Facebook, Facebook can also say, hey, is there a Facebook cookie here by any chance? That's how the like button knows it's you. You press that like button, that thumbs up button, it checks and says, oh, yeah, I see it's Leo, and it adds the like to your account. And that's how third-party cookies can be sometimes used to track you, because anytime you go to a site with a Facebook like button or any Facebook content, Facebook can see you're there. And so they can see all the places you go. Why else did Facebook create this like button? It's not so that you can like stuff. It's so that they can track you. And it's for that reason that many browsers say block third-party cookies, do not allow them. You should always turn that on as a privacy thing. Turn on any fingerprinting technology. Turn any fingerprinting blocking technology, because you don't want to be tracked as you go from site to site. You should. The cookies are great for the individual site. They save you a lot of time. And that's why this GDPR pop-up, we use cookies, is dopey. Because, of course, every site uses cookies. Notice it's on every site. The only site it's not on are sites where people from Europe can't visit. But every other site it's on, and that's why you say, yeah, go ahead. Because otherwise you'd have to see that pop-up every time, and you'd have to log in every time, and there'll be all sorts of inconveniences. That's what cookies are for. Sometimes I think the general data protection regulation, GDPR, is a good idea in general. But it has some things that are weird. For instance, you might have seen this story this week in the BBC. A little dispute between a grandmother and her daughter. Grandma was posting pictures of the grandkids on Facebook. Well, of course she was. That's what grandmas do. But the daughter didn't like it. Daughter said, Grandma, I don't want pictures of my kids on the internet. A lot of parents do that. I understand. For privacy reasons. I don't want pictures of my kids on the internet. She said, Grandma, take them down. Grandma said, no. No. Those are my grandkids. I want pictures. I want my friends to see my grandkids. Grandma, take those down. She actually went to court. The daughter did. And the judge ruled that this was within the scope of the GDPR and ordered Grandma to take them down. Now, GDPR does not normally apply to what they call purely personal or household processing of data. But because it's on a social site, it's on Facebook, those photos could end up in the hands of third parties, of course. The woman, the grandma, has to remove the photos or pay a fine of 50 euros every day for every day she fails to comply, for a maximum fine of 1,000 euros. And if she posts more pictures of the grandkids, that's another 50 euros a day. Where's the problem here? And probably not GDPR, probably between the mother and daughter more than anything else. But that's an example of how, despite the fact that I think the general data protection regulation is a good thing, we have in California the California Privacy Act, which is also a good thing. That'll be going, most of it isn't yet in effect, but will be going into effect soon. I think that's a good thing. But this is the problem. It's hard to regulate technology without some messes, a little bit of mess here and there. And boy, that cookie thing bugs the crud out of me. 888, does it bother you every time you go to a site? I guess we're used to it now. That's the other side, by the way, of that kind of regulation. Here in California, we had some years ago, a ballot measure called Prop 65. And it said that the state requires a warning. It's officially the Safe Drinking Water and Toxic Enforcement Act of 1986. That's how old it is. 1986. It's 34 years old now. It requires the state to maintain and update a list of chemicals known to the state to cause cancer or reproductive toxicity. But it also requires that any place any of those chemicals may appear, such as a Well, everywhere, a parking garage or whatever, you have to put up a sign saying Prop 65 warning. There's toxic chemicals around here that could cause cancer or birth defects. No. What's the upshot of that? Every place you go has that sign. So it's meaningless. You don't pay any attention to it. You ignore it, right? I mean, what are you going to do? Not go anywhere? Same thing with these cookies. It has the exact opposite intent because what it really does is it dulls you to the real danger, minor but specific danger of cookies tracking you, and just makes it be, yeah, okay. Put the sign away. See, that's the mistake, I think, that you make. 8888 Ask Leah, what do you want to talk about today? I'm here for you. I'm your tech guy today. The SE is fine. It's a little small. But in this mask era, it's kind of nice to have a phone that uses a fingerprint reader. You know, it's got big bezels. But yeah, it's not bad, I have to say. I don't mind it. It's fast. It's just as fast as the iPhone 11. It's just a smaller screen and a fingerprint reader instead of a Face ID, which, frankly, is fine. Oh, interesting. Well, you know, this story was that Apple wanted to put through the screen fingerprint but couldn't get it working. Samsung's been using it. So has OnePlus. OnePlus's works very well. It's fast. So let's see. Samsung's doing it, I think. One of them's sonic and one of them's optical. One of them's using like ultrasound. And I think that's the fast one. Whatever Samsung's using is pretty slow. Whatever OnePlus is using is pretty fast. Love my XPS. It's a miracle. It's the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy Schaffer.
Good morning.
We call you unbreakable because they try. Day in, day out, they call you. They try to break you. You just can't be broken. They don't really try to break you. Do they try to break you? No.
No. They're good.
Everybody's so nice. Very nice. I know we have a sweet bunch of people.
We have great listeners.
Who should I speak with first?
I think Bob in Pasadena has a question that I know I can relate to, so I think a lot of other people.
Good. That's always good. Yes, I want the questions everybody can relate to.
And hopefully won't be too tough on you to start out the day.
Yeah, I have to complain. Yesterday, it was nothing but hard questions.
Oh, no. See, I don't think they're hard for me to even understand what they're saying, but for you, I figure you got the brain.
Should know.
You got the big brain.
He's the tech guy. He ought to know the answer. Well, I was just struggling yesterday. Let's see if I can do better today. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Okay. Thank you. I have a pretty simple question first about Windows 10 upgrade.
Okay.
I have one that still has Windows 7 on it, and the reason that it still has Windows 7 on it is that it has Microsoft MapPoint on it. And have you ever used Microsoft MapPoint?
I think I dimly remember this from many years ago. It was their mapping software, but it was standalone software, right?
Yes, it was standalone software, but it would update to road conditions, and there was certain primitive, you know.
This was in the old days before Google Maps, right?
Well, I think the last version of it, I believe, is like 2013, maybe 16 or 13. Yeah. But they shut it down, and the reason that I love it is that I have an autistic son, and we go on cross-country road trips.
Oh, fun.
And planning for him and showing him in detail where we're going to go and what times. And I've yet to find a replacement program that can map out the way this can. For, you know, there are all kinds of business-type mapping programs that are about delivery routes and stuff.
Yeah, you don't want to use those because those are really expensive. Yeah.
So he
wants a printout, like he can hold it?
I actually print him out a map. Like, we'll go 30-day cross-country trips, and so I'm able to print out an entire map of the United States so he can see the macro route picture, and then day-by-day triptych.
Yeah.
So
like
I'm going
like AAA used to do when you go there.
Right. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But so I'm terrified about upgrading to Windows 10 and losing MapPoint. And I've tried to go online and see if anybody could tell me if MapPoint would survive a Windows 10 upgrade. If I were to do the Windows 10 upgrade and then MapPoint didn't work, can I go back to Windows 7 and not have lost MapPoint? Or is there a good chance that in that upgrade it's going to be wiped out?
I can't guarantee, but in general, the idea is there is a rollback in case you didn't like Windows 10, and it should put it back exactly the way it was. I would suggest you do an image backup of your system. And you can do that with the Windows 7 backup utility. You can make a full image backup of your system. And that way, if Windows 10, it came out 7 years ago. I bet it'll work with Windows 10. But you're right. If it didn't, you could then roll back. And in theory, you wouldn't have to do anything. You just roll back. Everything would still be there. But it would be probably prudent also to make a backup just in case. And you already have the Windows 7 backup program. They call it, in Windows 10, they call it the legacy backup. Does what we call an image, a full drive backup that can then be restored.
Okay.
So that's what I would do. I should point out, you might play with Google Maps because they have a print feature. And you could print the whole route. You know, if you zoom out to the United States and then print a daily triptych, you could probably do that without too much trouble. I would certainly check that.
I have done that. But the beauty of MapPoint is you can tell MapPoint, okay, I only want to drive this many miles a day or this many hours a day. And it will plan out the where you should spend the night. It will.
It's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it has. And it's still just it. I don't hate Microsoft. I've lost any feeling I have ever had towards Microsoft.
You're just numb at this point, as we all are. We're just numb.
Just complete indifference.
Yeah.
But I have lamented because I always thought it was just a superb program, and for it to have gone away was sad.
I think they want you to use Bing Maps. You might look and see if Bing Maps does any of that.
Yeah. You know, the Bing and Google both have limitations on how many sites you can put in.
You want every stop. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And there is a Windows Maps app now in Windows 10, but I bet you anything, it's nothing like MapPoint.
Well,
it might be worth looking
at.
When you install Windows 10, just look.
Okay.
So does he love maps? Does he just love maps? I love maps. Does he love them?
You know, I can name a town that we've been to, and he can tell me what day we were there, what highways we went to. He's just very
spatially.
Cool.
Cool. You know,
I would never bring him with me to commit a crime because he would be able to report it exactly.
Well, Dad, don't you remember? We were in Boise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there is, and I will give you a link because the chat room's come up with a link from a site called WindowsReport.com, which talks about installing MapPoint on Windows 10.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. It's not officially supported, but it looks like it will work. And I really see the reason why you want this. I think that's so cool. Do they still sell those Thomas guides? Remember the big map books?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember if Thomas got bought by, like, I want to say Rand McNally or somebody else.
Yeah, probably, huh?
Thomas tried to do digital versions, and they were just behind the curve. They just didn't. Yeah, so no, we laugh about, in fact, we were watching an old Adam 12 episode the other day.
Yeah, they pull out the book.
We're like, oh my God.
I did. I mean, I vividly remember planning trips on those things before I'd go anywhere. Yeah, give it a try. I think this is great. I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sam's coming up. That's so cool. He loves maps. I understand that. He gets them.
Well, he's got a dad who loves maps too. So.
Yeah, I love. Isn't that weird? I have that same feeling. It's like maps. I could stare at them. I love atlases. Does he like atlases?
He just memorizes everything and can
so
tell you
cool.
all stuff. Hey, I have one other quick question for you. May I ask it?
Absolutely.
This was actually the real reason I was thinking I was going to make that a very quick question. Do you have any kind of a guide that you could point me to as far as managing the flow of backup? Because I've got I've got iCloud, iDrive, Dropbox, and
crazy.
A Synology going.
Me too. Yeah.
And it just it seems like it multiplies on it own, on its own.
Yeah.
Is there any? Are you aware of any kind of workflow or like?
Yes. My friend Peter Krogh, I mention him all the time. He's a photographer. And he worked with the Library of Congress and the Association of Professional Photographers to create a site called DP for Digital Photography, Best Flow, as in Best Workflow,
.org. That's awesome.
DPBestflow.org. And he wrote, there's a whole bunch of different things there, but he wrote the definitive backup article for this site. It's his 1-2-3 backup, and I send people to this all the time. It's really, really good.
Bestflow.org.
It's intended for photographers. It's from the American Society of Media Photographers and the Library of Congress. But if you go to the backup section under best practices, I think you'll find, you know, you're not necessarily going to find a comparison chart, but what you're going to find is kind of the theory of the best possible backup. And photographers are very aware of this because they don't want to lose any photos.
You know? I was going to say, those are guys that are going to be absolutely 10X on me, on my concern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I've followed, Peter's a good friend, and I've followed his 3-2-1 rule for years. So I would highly recommend it. And I always talk about the 3-2-1, but that's one part of it. So there's a whole backup overview section that I highly recommend. I mean, if you care about this stuff, I highly recommend it.
No, as soon as you told me even the name of the website, I'm like, okay,
I know, that's it. The best workflow for photographers.
By the way,
that's for me.
I know you're a busy guy. We're off the air, so I can be honest with you. Honest to God, I could listen to you talk about how freaking grass grows. You are so enjoyable to listen to. You got some of the best pipes anybody's ever had on radio, and just love what you do every week.
You're making me cry. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening.
I appreciate it.
It's very kind of you.
Take care, Leo.
All right. See you. Bye. I love you, man. It's time to go driving with Sam Abul-Samad. He's our car guy, principal researcher at Guidehouse Insights. He is a podcaster. His Wheel Bearings podcast is for anybody who loves cars at wheelbearings.media. And he joins us every week. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leo. How are you this week?
I'm great. How are you doing in the Motor City?
I'm doing better now that the sun is shining. We've had a lot of rain over the last couple of weeks. The sun's shining. It's supposed to get up to 86 today.
Memorial Day weekend. Summer's finally here.
And I can't go anywhere.
I know. I know. There was an article in the New York Times about how rich people are building pools so that they can have basically a country club in their backyard. And I'm thinking, man,
we were actually looking for one.
We're going to get like a doughboy.
We had one.
Yeah.
Like an 18-foot, you know, like one of those easy set pools.
Yeah, that's what.
And you can't find them anywhere.
No.
Nobody's got them.
Nobody.
And so we got like a smaller, like inflatable kid pool just to chill out in for a while.
Exactly. You got to have these ideas before everybody else does, like, you know, in the winter.
Right.
What do you want to talk about today, Mr. Car Guy?
So over the last couple of weeks on several of the shows on the network, on Twig, I think Twig was the first place I heard about it. And then on some of the other shows, you've talked about it. Wink, a company that makes smart home hubs, announced recently that they were going to a subscription plan. Because it used to be you'd buy a piece of hardware and then it would just work. And this was a smart home hub. And what they're doing now is they're shifting, although I guess they've delayed the shift, they're changing to a subscription plan where you have to pay $5 a month to use this device to control your devices in your home, for obvious reasons, a lot of people got pretty upset about, you know, and we've had other issues like this in the past.
It feels like a little bit of a betrayal because it was the idea originally was you pay for the hardware and you have a lifetime service.
Right.
But that's not tenable. I understand. I mean, intellectually, anyway. The Wink needed to have a fee. They should have thought of that.
Yeah. And I mean, you've talked about this, you know, many times, you know, with regard to things like VPN services, you know, where you're not paying for it, or any other service that you're not paying for on an ongoing basis where there's some support costs associated with that. And, you know, this, as we move towards automated driving, this is an issue that's going to be more of a problem with automated driving going forward as well, because, you know, as we start to put this automation in vehicles, for the first time in the history of the auto industry, they're having to actually to continue to support the product,
you
know,
right,
with updates after it gets released to the after it gets sold to a consumer. You know, the model for 130 years has been build it, sell it, and forget it. Move on to developing the next generation of that product. And, you know, what we're seeing, what we're going to see now, and we've already seen it over the last 6 years, seven, 8 years now with Tesla, since they launched the Model S, where they're shipping out ongoing software updates. Well, you know, as we've seen with Wink and with many other companies, the cost of doing those updates, you know, it's not free. I mean, you have to pay software engineers. You have to pay a lot of other engineers to develop the software, to test it and validate it. And then to distribute it and make sure that it gets, you know, that it gets uploaded to people's vehicles accurately and, you know, to maintain the security. So, you know, with automated driving, because it's immature technology and because it is so software driven, you can't just ship it and forget it. You're going to have to, manufacturers are going to have to update it on a regular basis, both for security updates, just like, you know, we get, you know, patches for our updates, over-the-air updates for our phones. You're going to need that for automated driving systems and increasingly for other systems as well. And so manufacturers have been looking at how do we pay for this? You know, because, you know, but the traditional model, they're not getting any extra revenue for that. So there's basically three ways you can go about it. One way is, you know, to estimate what it's going to cost you over the life of that vehicle and build that into the upfront price. Well, vehicles are already getting really expensive. Affordability is a real problem. You know, people are already going to 84-month car loans.
Even before the pandemic. Wait a minute. I have to do the math. That's what, 6 years?
That's a seven-year loan.
Holy cow.
You know, it's like getting a mortgage for your car.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Wow.
You know, and then, you know, the next model would be a subscription model like what Wink and others are doing. You know, but then, you know, are you going to require a customer that buys the car to continue to pay a monthly subscription to get those updates?
Well, there's a history of this because GM's OnStar, mm-hmm, right? Didn't you have to subscribe to that? I mean, you might get a year or two free when you first start buy the car.
Yeah, every manufacturer, their telematics services, you know, and what they've started to do, it used to be, you know, with OnStar, you would get 3 or 6 month trial period.
Right.
And what they do now is they're building the hardware, they build the hardware into all the vehicles, and now you get 5 years of basic services that require very relatively little data. So there's very little cost associated with that. And they build in the cost of that up front. So that's, you know, so they're doing, GM's doing, and others are doing this kind of a sort of a hybrid model. So you get basic stuff for free up front. And then if you want the premium services, you pay for those on an ongoing basis, you know, as a subscription.
That seems fair to me. I mean, the difference is that the car is going to still run. You're still going to be able to drive it. Yeah. It's not like it's just going to go, oh, you got to pay me now if you want to keep driving it. It's these kind of fancier add-ons that you have to subscribe to. And I guess I'm okay with that. I subscribe to Sirius XM, right, for the satellite radio. I mean, I don't expect that stuff for free.
You know, but automated driving, it gets a little more complicated because now if that stops working, it's like...
Well, you actually have to drive.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and, horrors.
You know, Elon Musk has already been hinting that, you know, they've been gradually increasing the price of the full self-driving package when you buy a Tesla. It's going by another $1,000 to $8,000 come July. And then, you know, he's saying that at some point they're going to offer it as a subscription. So you have that recurring revenue stream.
Yeah.
So this is why most manufacturers, you know, for their fully automated vehicles are looking at the robo-taxi or delivery model where you're not actually going to sell the vehicles. You pay per use, you know, on an ongoing basis. And that way they get that recurring revenue stream.
Don't you think at some point private ownership of cars is just going to go away? It's not a very efficient means. Most cars are driven very little, you know, what is it, 10% of the time?
Yeah, that has certainly been the thinking for a while now. But what we're actually starting to see now through this pandemic, because people are so concerned about getting into confined.
Well, that's true. Spaces. I don't want to ride an Uber or a Lyft. Yeah,
there was a recent consumer survey that was done by IBM. They surveyed 14,000 American consumers, and they found that about more than 50% said that, you know, after the pandemic, they plan to use their personal vehicles more or exclusively going forward.
Wow.
And for all shared modes, whether it was car sharing or ride hailing or public transit, it was 50% or more were going to use it less or not at all.
Wow.
So, you know, people are definitely concerned about this. So, you know, manufacturers are looking at how to disinfect these vehicles, but it's a problem that they're going to have to solve if we're ever going to get there to that idea of shared mobility.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you predicted this last week. It happened. Hertz has declared bankruptcy.
Yep.
Chapter 11, they're reorganizing. They're not going away. But that means
selling off a lot of their fleet.
Yeah, it means a lot of cars will go on the market. Used car prices should tumble. And it's bad news for new car manufacturers because fleet sales are a big part of their business.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
So more so for some manufacturers than others. But
what's the number one fleet vehicle? It used to be a Taurus. I don't think that's true anymore.
Yeah. Well, they don't make the Taurus anymore, right. At least not in North America.
Right.
But, you know, Nissan sells a lot of cars into the rental car fleets, the Nissan Altima and the Versa.
That's true.
Sentra,
I've driven a few Altimas on Hertz, actually.
A lot of Chevy Malibus, mm-hmm. A lot of the midsize sedans that, you know, general sales have been declining, but they still sell a lot of those into the rental car fleets. So those are the main ones.
It's a changing world. I don't know what it's going to look like in a year or two, but it's definitely going to look different. But Sam will be here, I promise you, to keep us up to date on the car biz. Guidehouse Insights, Wheel Bearings Podcast. Sam, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Really interesting stuff. Really interesting.
Yeah, right? It looks like if you go to HertzCarSales.com. HertzCarSales.com is where they sell off their, you know, where they've always sold off their used vehicles from the fleet. So once they get to about 50,000 miles, they take them out of service and sell them off. And it's always been a good place to get a really good deal on a lot of different kinds of cars. But apparently they now have about 70,000 cars listed for sale.
Well, my daughter wants to get a car. She doesn't have a car right now. So I think this might be the place to look at one, huh? Because they'll also be relatively low mileage.
Yeah, they're usually less than 50,000 miles on used rental cars. And they, you know, they do a pretty good job of maintenance on their vehicles. Now, you know, you may miss out on some of the nicer features because they tend to be the lower trim levels that you find in the rental fleets.
Well, she doesn't want a fancy car. She wants a cheap car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad place to look.
Yeah. She just needs a car to get around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Thank you, Sam.
I dropped a link in the chat earlier. I'll drop it in there again. It was an excellent presentation that Dr. Missy Cummings gave to the NTSB last week. She's a professor at Duke University, engineering professor. And it's about the interaction. She studies the interactions between humans and automation.
Oh, interesting.
And she did a great talk on this, you know, on why it's so hard to develop automated systems, you know, especially for safety critical systems. And it's about an hour long. You know, I think the actual presentation is about 45 minutes and then goes into some Q&A. But it's worth sitting through at least portion of it because she gives a really good explanation of this kind of spectrum from skills based to knowledge and reasoning and expertise and where humans versus machines fall into those different segments.
Very interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Let's get back to the lines. Scott in Binghamton, New York. Hello, Scott. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have a nightmare experience here today.
Oh,
I know you have Synology NAS also, and I have two little boxes here, and I only have one online at a time, and periodically I switch them and then do, you know, maintenance and up.
Is the idea that just for the redundancy you have two of them?
No, they're actually you know, contain separate stuff. And,
oh, okay.
But anyway, I've done it several times and never had a problem. But today I swapped and put, I'll call them DS1 and 2, and I put number 1 online today, and I go to my web browser and
nothing.
Can't find
nothing there. Uh-oh. So
and then a cold sweat broke over me, and I thought, and sure enough, I put back the one that had been running just earlier this morning, and it can't find that one either.
Uh-oh. Oh, this is probably easy to fix, Scott.
I hope.
I wouldn't freak out.
No, I'm...
So, it's probably just a network setting or something like that. I mean, it's highly unlikely that both NASs would somehow break at the same time.
Right.
So, it's a setting thing. So, the way you use the NAS, you log into it using a browser?
Yes.
Yeah. And do you use... So, Synology... has an interesting thing called Quick Connect. One of the problems with having a NAS is basically a massive hard drive. It stands for Network Attached Storage. And I know you know this, Scott. I'm explaining it to everybody else, so we know what we're talking about. Typically, what you do is use it as a backup device because it has so much storage. It's headless; doesn't have a screen or mouse or keyboard or anything. You get into it by logging into it using a browser. There are issues doing that, though, and so Synology has done something called Quick Connect, which essentially, when the NAS is online, it pings the Synology servers out there in the world saying, I'm here at this address. Synology makes a note of that, and when you use Quick Connect, you can just type in Quick Connect to the name of your Synology, and as long as that's turned on in the Synology, your browser will go to Synology.com effectively, and it'll say, "Oh yeah, your NAS is over here. Let me connect you," like a switchboard operator. But that's only one way to do it. Is that what you're using? Is you're using Quick Connect?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So that could be turned off. Yeah, that could be off or down. You can also go directly to the Synology if you know its IP address on your LAN and you're on the same network. So I presume you have one network in the house, right?
And I think that's essentially what it's doing, because when I load up my browser, it says 19x dot dot dot.
Okay,
dot,
yeah, that is what you're doing then. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're not using Quick Connect. It's too late to turn on Quick Connect if you can't log into the
right.
Synology. But that is sometimes a better way to do it, only because it allows it gets through firewalls and other network
sure.
things that can kind of get in the way. So you might look at that. The way I do it is a little bizarrer, which is I give it its own domain name. I have a lot of domain names lying around, and so I give it something like leo.cloud.
Gotcha.
And if you have the right port open, you can go right to it. It may be a port issue also, because the Synology wants, I think it's 5001, I think is the port you use.
That's what it's looking for I point my browser there. Because it ain't there now.
Yeah. So a couple of things could have happened.
I'm not sure how to check any settings
No, you can't get into it. You have to get into it first before you can change anything.
Exactly.
So the first place to go now is your router, because that's really what screwed it up, I believe.
Yeah.
So the router settings changed, or the router decided. So there's a couple of things you always want to do. One, you want to have a reservation for the Synology. And both of them will need a reservation, so that whenever those go online with their particular MAC address, the router will go, oh, you're always 192.168.1.5050 or whatever, right? You want it to always have the same number. And so you do that in the router. You say, usually is when that thing is connected. The first thing I do is I'd log, you know how to get into your router, log into your router?
Right, yep.
So log into your router. The first thing to do is look at connect one of the Synologies and look at what devices are attached. If you don't see it, then the router's not seeing it, then you can't get to it. So the first thing to do is see if the router can see it. And if it cannot, then you want to look at the cabling, you want to look at the, it's highly unlikely that the network cards on both Synologies failed simultaneously, unless you have a bad power situation or something is happening and a spike shot through both of them and it fried the network port on both of them. I mean, this can happen, so I don't want to rule it out. But usually, if both things fail at the same time, then it's likely that it was the thing that they're connecting to, in other words, the router. So go into the router, see if you can see a connected Synology NAS. If you can see it in the attached devices, all's good. Then you'll reserve whatever that number is, you know, 192.168.1.27. That's where mine is. That's how I remember that. And say that should always be, whenever this MAC address device attaches to the network, make sure it gets 27. And don't give that to anybody else. At that point, you know the IP address, and it's always going to be the same.
Okay.
And you probably can just use that IP address. Sounds like that's what you've been doing in your browser, :5001. That's the port. And it may be merely that the router isn't reserved, and it just by chance it gave a different number, and so you can't log into Synology that way. So the first thing to do is log into the router, see if the Synology is visible. If it's not, then you're going to have to do a little more troubleshooting. Maybe you need a better – maybe the cable went bad. You know, there's all sorts of things that could
– Oh, that could happen.
Could happen. Yeah. So, yeah, that first thing to do is see if you can see it in the router. Now, I'm also going to put a link – in our web page, techguylabs.com, to Synology's troubleshooting, NAS connection problems, because there's some other things you could try. But I think for you, it's pretty clear they both failed at the same time. It's pretty clear the router is doing it.
Why do these things always happen on a long...
well, at least I hope you have the time to work on it. Don't freak out, though. I could tell you're worried about your data. That's one of the reasons you use a NAS, because it has multiple... disks, there's redundancy built in. So even if a hard drive fails in your NAS, I use the Synology with 5 drives, and I use 2.
Yeah, mine are both 4, but I love
the... Yeah, that's the, yeah. That's RAID 5, and if one drive goes, it's okay. You can put a new drive in. You don't even have to shut it down. It'll rebuild, and your data is secure. So that's good. You've been using a Synology. I still, by the way, and I would suggest, you still have another backup for the Synology. If you look in the tools, that most NASs will offer a variety of ways to back up to the cloud, for instance, iDrive for a Synology. One of the things I do is I use Synology's Hyper Backup program, and I have a duplicate Synology here, and I have both the Synologies syncing to each other. So I have 2 copies. One is off-site, but off-site at work. So it's very easily accessed. I could even bring it home and connect it up. I do not fear. Do not fear. Try a different cable if your router can't see it. But I bet your router can see it, but just as assigned a new IP address. That would be the simplest explanation. Good luck. That is a scary thing. I can't see my data. What's going on? But that's why you got backups. Even a Synology is not a sufficient backup. You want multiple backups. Just because something's RAID 5 and redundant doesn't mean you should put all your eggs in that basket. It's a good basket, very nice basket, but you should have another basket. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Well, it's hour number 2 of the Tech Guy Show. Look at that. Look how quickly time passes when we talk about tech. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You could still reach me anywhere in the world, but you need something like Skype out, some voice over internet solution to let you call a phone number. Shouldn't cost you anything because the phone number is toll free. 8888-ASK-LEO. We have a website where you can go not only to see answers to the questions, we also have audio and video of previous shows. Almost 1,700 shows there now. TechGuyLabs.com. That's all free. There's no sign up. I don't want your email address. I'm not going to send you spam or anything. TechGuyLabs.com. You can also, and this is, I love it when people do this, leave comments there. So if you hear something, you've got an idea. Dr. Mom, for instance, said, oh, yeah, I've had that problem with my Synology NAS where the router's DHCP table gets changed. And she said Synology has tools for that. So that's a place you could also, you could say it in the chat room and I could say it on the air, but you could also go to the website, techguylabs.com, and leave that in the comments. Always very handy. And because that site's free and will always be free, it's a way for we can all help one another. There's a good search there, and you can go there and find answers to all kinds of questions. I mention the chat room all the time. That's because it's a great bunch of people at irc.twit.tv. You can use a browser or a old-fashioned, old-school IRC client to join there. irc.twit.tv. They're there 24/7. You know, I don't just do the radio shows. During the week, we do podcasts about technology. The podcast network is Twit, This Week in Tech. And so that's a Twit chat room, and we keep it running all the time. Even in the middle of the night, there's people from all over the world in there. irc.twit.tv. Okay, just a little word of warning. At the press conference in the White House a couple of days ago, the president's press secretary held up a check because, you know, he's donating his salary to various government agencies. And she held up the check to show that he was donating this quarter's salary to, I can't remember who it was, some agency. And but now normally, and you see this all the time, you know, somebody wins the lotto, you know, the Powerball, they hold up a giant check. Normally, when you get on camera with a check, you do a fake check because you don't want to show the real check. She held up a real check. People noted they could see the bank routing number and the checking account number. Now, I'm sure that the president's bank is not going to let somebody hack his account. That's not going to happen. But it is a good lesson for all of us. Be careful. Nowadays, we take pictures of everything, put them on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and stuff. Be careful what you share pictures of. And that includes not just bank checks. You really don't want to take a picture of a check and put it online. Driver's licenses, passports, even plane tickets. The barcode on a plane ticket often contains lots of information that you might not want a bad guy to get. Even, and this is a weird one, your keys. It is completely possible, happens all the time, that somebody can, let me hold up a key that isn't, here, I don't think this unlocks anything important, but this key, if you had a picture of this key, which now a lot of people do, there's software that would take that picture and turn it into a physical key. So you might be tempted as, you know, you got a new house, right? You're holding up the keys to my new house. How exciting. Take an Instagram, post that. Be careful. Somebody could actually turn that into a real key. This happened very famously. This happened. You know that you can buy luggage or luggage locks that have they're TSA approved because there's a master key that the TSA has that can unlock that. Problem with that is there's only one master key. All TSA keys are exactly the same. And it took about 5 seconds for somebody to take a picture of a TSA key and duplicate it. So you got to be careful. Burke, one of my engineers, saying, well, but it has to be a very good picture of the key. It does not. I've seen people enlarge really poor pictures of keys. It has to be good enough, but doesn't have to be great. It can be in the distance. It can be small. Try to keep your keys, your passports, your driver's licenses, your boarding passes, and yes, your personal checks off camera. Just a little tip, a little word of warning, be careful. And I say this with love and affection because I've done it myself. You know, we do video of all of our shows, including this show, and some people are watching the video. And I have, from time to time, by accident, shared my, let's say, American Express card number. I'll hold up the card, or I'll accidentally go to the screen that I'm typing the card number in so I can buy something. And immediately, I have to cancel that card, immediately, because it will be used. And I've done that more than once. So I'm just sharing this cautionary tale with all of you. Do not put your checks on camera. I'm sure nobody hacked the president's bank account. I'm sure that didn't happen. But it was a reminder that it's, you know, maybe probably not a good idea. Print one of those giant checks. Everybody loves those. Rayanne, Sun City, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rayanne.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just sitting here pruning my plants while I was waiting for you.
Aww. Are you outside or inside?
I'm outside.
Oh, how nice.
And it's getting warm today. It gets pretty warm in Sun City.
Well, you know, 3 weeks ago was Nude Gardening Day, May 1st. I hope you took advantage of that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I would have. Yes,
next,
for sure.
Next May 1st, I'm sure all the residents of Sun City would be thrilled.
Yeah, they're pretty cool people here. So.
That's great.
I'm sure there's a few that do that, too.
I bet there are. Lots of sun. It's good for you. Got that vitamin
a
D.
Lot of sun.
Yeah.
Yes.
What can I do for you, Rayanne?
Well, let's see. My neighbor gave me a computer yesterday, and it's the HP, right?
Nice.
Now, I haven't gotten internet yet, but my neighbors next door have given me their password for so I can use on my phone, right?
Oh, how nice. Their Wi-Fi password.
Yeah, their Wi-Fi password.
Your neighbors like you a lot, Rayanne.
Yeah, well, we do a lot of things for each other, so that's great.
That's so sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now Betty, my other neighbor, is the one that gave me her computer because she got upgraded by her boss, so she gave me hers. Now, I was just wondering, shall I get internet? Or so I want to see, okay, her.
You can use, I could go down, you can use the same Wi-Fi password on that HP, you bet.
Oh, yeah. But do I have to get it? I have to get a dongle because the it's a regular HP, it's not a laptop. And it doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Oh, it doesn't have Wi-Fi. Okay.
Yeah. Do I just get a dongle? Like it's like a USB.
Yeah, just a cheap USB. They're $20.
Oh, really? And then I just put it in, and it'll ask me the questions to download. And I'm not download, but they'll ask me for the password, and it should be set up. Is there software that goes with that?
Yeah, it'll install on Windows. It'll install automatically. So you plug in the dongle, and you know when you plug in something into it's a USB thing. When you plug something in the USB port, it goes dum dum. And then a little pop-up might come up saying installing driver, dong, dong. And then in your system tray down below, there's those little icons in the lower right-hand corner. One of them will be a little Wi-Fi icon, and you'll click on that, and it'll say, well, I see these Wi-Fi access points. You pick your neighbors. It'll say, oh, what's the password? You type in the password, and you're online.
Oh, right on. Make sure you tell
the neighbors you're going to do that.
No, they know. They know already.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
That's great, huh?
Yeah, Amazon sells them. A lot of places sell them. You just look for USB Wi-Fi, and they're not expensive. And honestly, there's no point in getting anything too fancy. The one thing you might want, because it's the neighbor's Wi-Fi, it's not nearby, is some of them have a little, an antenna that sticks up. And that helps a lot in the reception. Some of them don't. And if you were near a Wi-Fi access point, I would say, well, you can get the one that doesn't. TP-Link sells for $10.
I'm real close.
But it doesn't have an antenna in it. I mean, it has an antenna, but it's just a little tiny thing because it's in the USB nub. So you might look at one that has a bigger antenna because you'll get better reception that way. They'll cost you about $20 instead.
But do you think that Target would carry that?
Yeah.
So I don't have to wait for it to get here. I want to get it today.
Call them. But yeah, they have a computer area, and they may well have that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Leo. And I've been listening to you for years. I just never called in. And thank you for your service.
Oh, you're welcome, Rayanne. Enjoy your gardening. What a beautiful day to be doing that.
Yeah. God bless you, and you have a great day.
God bless. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, I've used those many times. They work fine. Sometimes they're better than the built-in Wi-Fi. On a lot of older computers especially, you'll probably get something a little bit more modern. But I always have to point out that, you know, her neighbors gave her the password and they said it's okay. But you always point out that just because you can get on somebody's Wi-Fi doesn't mean it's okay to do that. If they give you permission, wonderful. They're sharing Wi-Fi. That's nice. But you're on their network, and people should use a password on their network. They should protect it. Because you don't want anybody driving down the street to start using your Wi-Fi. That could be a security problem, okay? There's also the issue of bandwidth and so forth. But if her neighbors think it's a great thing, that's very neighborly. That's a wonderful thing to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. To the hamburger stand now. I wish we could cruise to the hamburger stand now. Beverly, Sierra Madre, California. Hi, Beverly.
Hi, Leo. Oh, I need your help.
Oh, no. What's the matter, Beverly?
Well, golly. My phone, even though
It's not on automatic, not on manual.
Yeah.
I decided to download the latest Apple install, 13.4.1.
Right.
Ever since that happened,
yeah,
I have to completely power off my phone, bring it back up just to get into an app.
What?
Yes, sir.
What? That's so you mean you're pressing and holding the on-off button, and it wait till it says slide to turn off, and you're sliding it to turn off, then you're pressing and holding the on-off button until a white apple shows up, and then waiting for it to boot up, and then you can run an app?
Yes.
And then after that, you can't?
Yes.
That's bizarre.
That's the problem.
It broke your phone. So 13.4.1, in fact, always when Apple pushes out updates, I recommend you do them because they're almost always have some security patches in there. And so even if Apple isn't trumpeting that loudly, it's probably a good idea when you get an operating system upgrade to do it. However, anytime you upgrade the operating system in between, while you're running it, there's always the risk. What I liken it to is when you you've seen the magicians where you have a table and there's glassware and the china and it's all set, and then they whisk the tablecloth off and everything stays there. You've seen people do that. But upgrading your operating system in place is kind of like whoosh, whisking the tablecloth off and then putting it back.
My dish is broke.
Your dish is broke. I'm sorry. Usually this doesn't happen, but inevitably some people are going to have this happen. I have never heard of this particular problem. That's kind of a weird one. So I'm guessing what you really want to do is, and if you called Apple, they would tell you to do this, and I hate to say it, but is to
on lockdown.
Well, yeah, you can't go to Apple. But they would, if you called them, they would say to do this.
They're not answering.
They don't even answer? Yo, no, they'll answer. Make sure. They're there. They're there. But here, you called me. I'll tell you the same thing, okay?
Thank you.
Do you ever back up your phone?
Yes.
Okay. You connect it to the computer and use iTunes? Is that how you do it? Or you do it to the cloud?
I do it to the cloud.
Okay. So my suggestion is, you put iTunes, if you don't already have it. Do you have a Mac or a PC?
Let me see, a PC.
Okay. So you will need to download it if you don't already have it, iTunes. Put it on your PC. Connect the phone via a USB cable. And then after you connect it by the USB cable, connect the phone, the Lightning cable, and iTunes will say, oh, hi, see a phone. You'll go through a trust process where the phone says, you want to trust this computer? And you say, yes, I want to trust this computer. And then you want to go on the phone settings on the computer to backup. You want to use the encrypted backup. Give it a password you'll remember. And what that's going to do is back up your whole phone, everything. And the reason you do it to the computer is it's just faster to do it this way. And the reason you want to do this is because now, after you've done that, I'm going to have you wipe your phone off.
Well, I've been trying to do a hard...
You go to General Settings and you erase all data, all content, everything. You go back to zero.
Wow.
But you've made a backup. That's why I've told you to make the backup, because you don't want to have to start completely from zero. But go back to zero and see if this behavior persists, like you can't run applications. Don't install anything yet, right? Just see if that behavior persists. Okay? And mm-hmm. If it does, then you go to the Apple store, you call Apple and say, my phone is broken, because it is. They would make you do this because they want to make sure it's not, something on there. Probably this will fix everything. And at that point, you can then plug it back into your computer and go back to iTunes and you can restore it. And what it's done is you've backed up the entire phone. And the reason I wanted you to use an encrypted backup, that includes passwords, settings, everything. And the restore will put it right back to the way it was. Without, I'm hoping, this problem of you can't run applications without rebooting the phone each time.
Thank you.
So this is a pain in the butt. It's going to take you the rest of the afternoon. But this is what Apple would tell you to do anyway. if the problem persists after you've backed up the phone and wiped it, before you put anything back on, if that problem happens, then the phone's got to be fixed. There's something wrong with it.
Okay, how can I tell before I put everything back on whether or not the phone is...
Just launch apps. Do you know? See if that same, you know, there'll be apps on your phone. It'll be all Apple apps. But launch them and see if you have the same problem. If it operates normally, then there's two possibilities. One is just was a bad update. These things happen. You broke some china when you whipped the tablecloth off and tried to put it back. That happens. That's most likely the case. If after you restore, the problem comes back, then... We now know it's something. Some app you installed is doing something weird. That's highly unlikely. That's not going to be the case.
I've gone through my apps. I've deleted them. And then
I don't think it's the apps. I think when the update happened, it mangled something. That's all. Just little mangling. That's all. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, photo guy, coming up. Our show today brought to you by our podcast, brought to you by IT Pro TV. I'm a big fan of IT Pro TV. If you're interested in IT career, and I know a lot of you are, you're listening to geeky programming on Twitter, or maybe you're already an IT professional and you want to get a better job or get more skills. It's always, you know, in IT, you've always got to expand your skill set. There's always more to learn, right? IT Pro TV is the place to start. One of the things that's great, if you're new to this, they have learning coaches who will help you navigate the IT career roadmap. So it's like, you know, career counseling, but for IT professionals, they're so good. They'll help you find the perfect career because there's not just one IT job. There's all kinds of jobs in IT. When you sign up for a premium membership at IT Pro TV, your expert guide will help you set up goals. They'll coach you, implement an IT training program. They'll help you reach that goal, whether you want to be in security, networking, you know, basic systems repair, that kind of, there's all sorts of stuff. And their extensive IT career paths library can assist you in learning more about the different IT careers, help you pick the one that's best for you, whether it's entry-level IT, cybersecurity. You can learn the ins and outs of all of them as a jumping point. You'll actually be able to learn what kinds of things you'd be doing. It's a great way to learn if this is something you want to do. And I know we don't want to be just focused on the money, but they'll tell you what the earning potential is for each job. Then, once your training's complete, IT Pro TV takes it a step further and helps assist you in finding the career of your dreams. And by the way, this isn't just for individuals. IT Pro TV as a learning coach for teams, engage and grow the skill base of your team members through a corporate premium membership. IT Pro TV now has more than 4,000 hours of IT training in their library. Up to date, by the way. This isn't some old dusty library you blow on and the dust goes flying, because they're recording in their five live studios Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, always keeping it up to date. The latest software, the latest hardware, the latest operating systems. They also have 12 on-demand courses for CompTIA certs because they are CompTIA's official video training partner. That's the A+, the Network Plus, and the Security Plus certifications. These are certifications many IT professionals have and many jobs require. So they're the place to go for CompTIA. Now's the perfect time to maximize the potential of your team. Help them get the certifications they need to become successful. Let IT Pro TV guide you into the IT career that's best for you. Go to itpro.tv/twit. Use the code TWIT30. By the way, that's important because you'll get 30% off your consumer subscription as long as you stay active. That could be for years. 30% off. That's a big, big, big chunk. itpro.tv/twit. Use the code TWIT30 for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Thank you, IT Pro TV, for supporting the Twit Network and the Tech Guy Podcast. We really appreciate it. And appreciate you using that URL and that offer code, itpro.tv/twit, offer code TWIT30. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk to Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. Hello, Chrissy. Sorry, I shouldn't call
Hello,
you Chrissy.
Hello, how are you?
Do you get mad if Chrissy, people call you Chrissy?
My dad used to call me that when I was young.
Okay. You gotta be careful with nicknames for people. Chris is a great photographer. I have huge respect for him. I love his photos. Normally, he leads these wonderful photo workshops all over the world at discoverthetopfloor.com. Not doing that, I guess. But he's still
working on other things.
He's still in. Yeah, but you got a secret project you're going to reveal next week. I saw that in the chat. But meanwhile, he is, you know, doing a lot of interesting, fun stuff. In fact, this is, you know, you've inspired me now to go out and you know, well, either take pictures at home or when I'm safely social distancing, go out and take pictures of our quarantined village because it's historic. It's fascinating. So.
They're different, right?
Yeah, there's definitely opportunities to safely do photography out there. But today you want to talk about some photo news.
Well, it's news. It's kind of a bit of a future of photography thing here. And there's just things going on. And I do keep an eye on what's going on in the field. So one thing that's just came out is a new piece of hardware by Sony, which is a sensor that has AI built in, which I find pretty interesting. So,
and by the way, Microsoft at their Build conference announced that they were working with Sony on this thing. So it's very interesting. Yeah.
So what this thing is doing is they have, a while ago, they announced this stacked design with like several chips on top of or under the sensor in the same package. And I wasn't really sure what they wanted to do with that, but now it's kind of clear. They're putting AI in the sensor, which means that the sensor is not only going to send the image for whatever software is behind it, and that would then do the processing. No, the sensor does the processing itself. So
that's
that
bizarre. Would enable. So it's not software in the camera. It's not in the cloud. It's on the sensor.
It's running on the sensor. So the sensor will then deliver not just the actual photo, but metadata. And that could be anything you want to put in that AI, like recognition of things. Like the sensor will deliver a photo of a dog, and it will deliver the word dog. It will tell the software behind what's on the picture. That kind of stuff is going to be enabled.
It's mind-boggling. Right now, I upload everything to Google because Google will do that. But that's an involved process. So you're saying this chip will just do it. Well, does it store it in the EXIF information of the photo?
I don't know. I have no idea how that communication really works. I think that's a new protocol or something. But it's interesting. I mean, the place where this happens, where the processing happens, is moving into the sensor, which
that's bizarre.
Again, will make things easier for camera manufacturers because they won't have to do that much processing anymore. And you can use it in, I think right now it's only in industrial applications, but that will move into our camera sooner or later. So that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. Second thing is a video that I found online about this whole image recognition thing and a bit of a cautionary tale about how those AIs that do image recognition can be fooled, because there's a lot of research going into that as well. So in that video, there's an example of a school bus that gets classified as a school bus.
Yeah.
And then what they do is they add some specially crafted noise to the picture that you don't really see with your eyes.
Yeah.
But it fools the image recognizer into recognizing the school bus as being an ostrich. So it really... There are attacks on these things, and they are getting really sophisticated.
You've got to know what you're doing, though. I mean, you have to know exactly how the recognition is working so that you can fool it. That's not going to work in every respect. Although I have seen studies that say people who paint their faces as juggalos, as insane clown posse clowns, face recognition doesn't work. And you know what? One of the reasons I'm loving wearing masks these days? No face recognition. No face recognition.
I hate that when I'm shopping and I have to type in my code all the time.
Well, that's true. It kind of breaks your iPhone. Yeah. But other than that.
So anyway, just keep that in mind. These things are not entirely foolproof, and there's a lot of research going in it on both sides of the ones who want good recognition and the ones who kind of want to thwart it. Third thing, and I do have four things. The third thing is an interesting, again, a video that goes into the creating a Ken Burns effect in 3D, but from a 3D image. So you know, these camera pans or remote. Well, we call this the Ken Burns effect. The picture is moving.
He used it in his documentary Civil War. Exactly. Apple appropriated it, which, by the way, really annoyed Ken Burns. They had a Ken Burns effect in iMovie, and Burns contacted him, said, "You can't use my name." So they made a deal. I think I'm sure they gave him something. But anyway, it is the Ken Burns effect, which is this pan and scan of a still photo. But you can do it in 3D.
So now what they're doing is they have an AI that estimates the depth in the picture. And then you move that virtual camera sideways and you get, it looks like a 3D picture.
Well, I've seen that on Facebook. The Facebook now, everybody's posting pictures that you can kind of move around. Is it like that?
It's probably a similar effect. It might be even the same algorithm. But it's really interesting that now a neural network can guess the depth and can create a 3D scene out of a 2D picture. And it's very convincing. It's very sweet looking.
We live in an interesting world, I must say. Yeah.
And this will I'm pretty sure this is already being used in movie production where they make 2D movies into 3D movies and that kind of stuff.
So instead of the Ken Burns effect, you can zoom in, but everything zooms in equally. This, because it understands depth information, zooms in with perspective. So the closer things zoom more than the farther things. That is
a
wild effect. Yeah.
It is wild, yes.
Yeah.
And last but not least, a while ago we talked about a generative adversarial network. That's the term, a neural network that creates pictures of people. And it was relatively easy to spot them. It was relatively easy to spot if they were real or not, the faces that came out of that. Behind it was a network called StyleGAN, and this has now been replaced by StyleGAN 2, which is the successor of the StyleGAN. It's doing more detailed pictures, more realistic portraits. It fixes a bunch of problems, has less artifacts. You will still, in some pictures, see artifacts, but it is so much better in creating fake portraits of people.
So I'm going to a website called This Person Does Not Exist, where it shows pictures of perfectly nice, ordinary-looking people, except they're not real.
They're not real. So
they're generated by AI?
They are generated by AI, and they do not exist. So if you need to build a website and you pretend you have a big team of 20 people on your company,
what a good idea.
Just take those. No one will
get upset. Is it bits and pieces of other people's faces that it's combining?
It's not really doing that. No, it has a bunch of parameters you can move around, like gender and color and hair style and that kind of stuff. And it is generating them. It has learned to generate people by looking at millions of photos. But it's not taking like a nose from here and an eye from here. It's doing it in a neural network way.
And by the way, it can also do cats.
Oh, it can do cats and cars, new cars. It can create new cars.
Like sometimes the cats look a little weird. It's funny. It's better at people than it is at cats. I don't know why. But
well,
you can create cars that don't exist.
Oh yes,
very clever. Oh, yes. Chris's projects are at Discover the Top Floor. He has a wonderful podcast about photography called Tips from the Top Floor at tipsfromthetopfloor.com. He also has a podcast on future photography, computational photography. He's a busy guy. And thank goodness he has time for us every week. Next week, your special project revealed.
Yes.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Cool. I like, you know, I like the little photo news segment every once in a while. That's fun.
Well, while I'm keeping those, I have a file where I throw all these in and then pick the most interesting ones.
I'm sure
ones.
You use it in the podcast. So.
Of course. I reuse it everywhere.
What is the assignment again? I forgot to mention it.
Normal,
that's right.
Normal.
The new normal.
All right, I will plug that when we get back. Thank you, Chris.
Okay. Talk to you next week.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Line 4, Ted in Burbank. Hello, Ted.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm no longer in Burbank. I'm just out here. I was coming down the 101 and, or 134 to the 101.
Yeah.
I'm like almost to Westlake.
Okay. So we just say Ted on the road that way, or on the road to Westlake. That would work.
I called because you were talking to the nudist there in Sun City.
Yes. I don't think she was actually nude. It was my suggestion, but okay. I know what you're talking about.
Right. I just thought I'd mention, you know, you told her about getting the USB dongle. You might want to mention that she should get the 5G dongle, not the slow 300.
Yeah. Good point. Although, again, she's getting it from her neighbor's house. So, you know, it's hard. 5G does not travel very well over distances, and it really doesn't travel well through walls. But that's a very good point. When you look at USB Wi-Fi dongles, you have a variety of choices, and you might want one that is tri-band that supports both 2.4 and 5G networks. Though, actually, the one I was looking at, which has the antenna sticking up for $22, does that. But that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. The little nano-sized dongle that TP-Link says, I bet you it doesn't. Of course, it's only $10. I suspect that regardless, she's going to be using 2.4 because she's next. You know, she's not. I'm assuming that when she said neighbor, it's a standalone house. Of course, if it's an apartment, she could probably use 5G. So, but, good point.
I allow my neighbor to share mine.
Oh,
that's the one thing we use.
Okay.
Is, the long one with the antenna.
Good. Okay. Yeah. I see a variety. There's one I'm looking at Amazon. I just searched for USB Wi-Fi. There's some with two antennas sticking up. Yeah. There's all kinds. There's also some with it with removable, and I've used these external antennas that you can position. So yeah. if you're having trouble with reception, that might improve it. That's nice of you to let your neighbor use the Wi-Fi. I think that's great of you.
I appreciate that, but I think they should have done free Wi-Fi across the country.
Oh, trust me, this is a hot point for me because, the big carriers, the big ISPs like Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T. Have lobbied state by state to shut down municipal Wi-Fi. A lot of cities started in Pittsburgh, or maybe it was Philadelphia. It was Philadelphia, the home of Comcast. They had municipal Wi-Fi. The city said, you know, it's worth it for us. It's not that expensive to set up a Wi-Fi network. It's good for business, good for the economy. And the big telcos went to the state legislature and said, shut that down. It's anti-competitive. You can't have the government competing against private industry. How dare you? And they did. And I think it's 24, 25 states now that prohibit municipal Wi-Fi. And I'm sure it'll be 50 states before these guys are done.
Didn't Chattanooga, weren't they one of the ones that
yeah.
had free Wi-Fi?
Yeah. Chattanooga's Power Authority did a really good idea, very high-speed internet. I think, did it get shut down? I can't remember if Chattanooga still has it or not. But
yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, that was...
Public access back in Flint, Michigan before they attacked that.
Same thing, right?
Yeah, same exact thing.
It's, it is kind of the nature of the way this country is set up that we're pro-free enterprise, pro-private business. But there are certain areas where for-profit businesses don't do as good a job as a government might. And one of the areas is in rural, particularly rural Wi-Fi. That's one of the reasons the FCC has set up a fund for rural Wi-Fi. They just denied it to Elon Musk's Starlink, which is a shame, saying that the latency was going to be too high for the satellite. I think that may solve the problem. Elon's launching as many as 12,000 very low Earth orbit satellites to provide internet globally, gigabit internet globally, wirelessly. And of course, if you're Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast, that must just scare the pants off of you. But I don't know if there's much they can do about it. Hey, drive safely, Ted. I appreciate the call. You're absolutely right. 5G. I hope she's still listening.
Great. Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, this Starlink, I think they've got, how many, 90 satellites already launched? They're launching more all the time. The idea is you'd have to get about a pizza box sized dish on your house or on your car or your RV. I feel like I should have one in a suitcase that I could carry with me. So if I'm traveling, I could set it up in the hotel balcony or on a cruise ship. But the idea is no matter where you are, every square inch of the earth would be covered by ultimately 12,000 satellites. He says, and remember what Elon says sometimes is, but he says that in the year, by the end of this year, 2020, the first paying customers of Starlink will be, I guess, unwired up. And over the next 4 or 5 years, they're going to launch many, many, many more satellites, and it's going to get faster and faster. FCC says, and they may be right, they say, you know, it's a satellite system. And historically, satellite systems, even very low Earth orbit satellite systems, have very high latency, which means they're not good for phone calls. They're really bad for video gaming. They might have speed, but there's lag because it has to go up to the satellite, down from the satellite, all of that. Elon says, nope, we're going to have sub 100 millisecond lag. We'll just have to wait and see. Be nice if we found out this year, wouldn't it? That'd be pretty cool. I shall be watching with great interest because then I could, you know, I could do the show out in the backyard. I could do it anywhere. Jim in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Sorry, I wasn't expecting a call.
No, I'm sorry. I jumped on you. I apologize. Jim, you've got a good solution for our map making family.
Yeah, the AAA website has, you can still make your own triptychs there. Oh. They support multiple destinations.
That's awesome. I presume you have to be a AAA member to use it.
I don't think so.
No, that's fantastic. See, because that's what we were talking about. In the old days, when you were going to go on a road trip, you'd go to AAA. They'd give you the maps. They'd draw lines on it. They'd do the whole thing. So now you can do it at AAA. Is it the map gallery? Yes, yes.
I don't know where it is.
I see it. I'm looking at it right now. AAA.com/map gallery. Yeah. That's fantastic.
I used it 4 or 5 years ago when I made a road trip from Los Angeles to Utah.
And they have a triptych travel planner. Oh, so that's AAA.com/triptych. Oh, this is exactly what they used to do. Thank you. I really appreciate that tip, Jim. I hope our previous caller is listening because that's fantastic. It does the same thing AAA used to do.
Yeah.
Does all the maps.
Yep.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. All right, thank you,
Leo. Take care. I love that. That's why, you know, I say this all the time. I can't answer every question, but between me, our chat room, the audience, there's going to be somebody who knows. What a great answer. It's AAA.com/triptych, T-R-I-P-T-I-K. And Jim's right. They're not asking me for a membership or anything. Enter the starting point and destination to map your route. Get turn-by-turn directions. Enter up to 25 stopovers so you can make a complete road trip. I think that's enough, even if you're driving across the country. It has point-of-interest icons, restaurants, attractions, events, gas stations. I would hope these days it would also have electric chargers, right, for the electric cars. Very cool. Thank you, Jim. We're going to take a break. Hour 3 of the Tech Guy program just around the corner. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. And again, all of this is put up on the website free for your perusal, techguylabs.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. If it's got a chip in it, I'll talk about it. Got a question, suggestion? People have been very helpful on the show today. That's nice. Give me a ring, 8888-ASK-LEO. Toll-free anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype out if you're outside that area and still call. Should be toll-free. The website where answers and questions live, techguylabs.com. Also audio and video from the show after the fact. Yeah, we shoot video. I know it's a radio show, but, you know, sometimes it's kind of fun to see the video, too. That's all at techguylabs.com. It's free. No sign up. No salesman will call. People like to sign me up for newsletters. I think they think it's funny since my address is fairly public. So I get a lot of newsletters. And I'm surprised at the number of other shows that send the amount of spam I get. from some of these other shows is phenomenal. No, I promise. I don't want your email address, and I will not send you spam. You can go there safely. There's a search, techguylabs.com. Back to the phones, line 3, Juan, San Marcos, California. Hello, Juan.
It's Ron, R-O-N.
Oh, she spelled it J-U-A-N, but it's pronounced Ron. Okay, good. Hi, Ron.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well.
Hey, for openers, I got my first haircut since February.
Oh.
I was ready to put to get some rubber bands to put a ponytail.
I was getting to the ponytail. In fact, it was just a short walk to Man Bun, and my wife said no, so she called our hairdresser in. We were all wearing masks, and I think it worked okay. I don't think I got sick. It felt a little scary, I have to admit.
This was done outdoors in the wind.
Yeah.
So all the hairs blew away.
Yeah, I think that's fine. The birds love it. It's good for nesting, and it's a relief, isn't it?
It's up off my ears.
Yeah.
I feel great.
When I was a teenager, you know, if my parents said cut your hair, I'd grow it longer. But now, I don't mind having a haircut every month or so. What can I do for you, Ron?
I've got a brand spanking new iMac.
Nice.
I purchased it on the 15th.
Congratulations.
And it came installed with Mojave, and I upped it to Catalina the following day.
Good.
It's got 10.15.4. I can't get the damn thing to talk to my office jet all in one.
Huh.
68.
So the HP printer is a Wi-Fi printer?
Yes.
Okay.
It's on the same
network. The HP has worked in the past continues to work with other computers on that network.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Worked with the previous one. I had called you about this the previous woman that froze up, and I hadn't had it backed up. And
oh yeah,
you remember that?
Yeah. So you got a new one. Good man. That's awesome.
I got the new one, and believe it or not, when I plugged in the new one, my daughter had backed it up to the cloud, and boom, everything came down, and everything was that she had backed up. It came into the new computer.
Isn't that a nice feeling?
Oh, it was great.
It's so rare that this stuff works as advertised that when it does, it's like, wow, it did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I went to. To HP and downloaded their latest drivers.
Does it have drivers for Catalina?
Well,
so that's the thing. So you did exactly what I was at first going to suggest. Normally, when you add a printer, and you can do this in the control panel on the Mac, and you add a printer.
Yeah.
Actually, system preference pane. Sorry, control panel is a Windows term.
Yeah.
System
yeah.
preference pane on the Mac. Add a printer. Normally, if the printer's on the network, it'll actually see the printer. Did it see it? Try this from the system preference pane just to make sure that you can see it. It'll see the printer. It'll say, oh, I see you have an HP OfficeJet. Would you like? And then you press add, and it will download the drivers from Apple, and it'll install it. If that doesn't work, that's the first thing to do. If that doesn't work, then it's appropriate to go to the manufacturer, in this case HP, and download the drivers. There is this little issue with Catalina. Apple has decided to leave behind all the old 32-bit software. And they've been warning people of this for some years. So software developers need to redo their software with modern 64-bit libraries, or they won't run at all on Catalina. So it is conceivable that HP has decided, since it's an older OfficeJet, we're not going to update those drivers. In which case, you may have an incompatibility, and maybe the specific drivers for that OfficeJet are 32-bit and won't work on Catalina. That's why my first suggestion is go to the control panel, the printer's control panel. Sorry, system preference pane.
Yeah.
And look, you know, look for the printer. If it's on the same Wi-Fi, it should show up with the printer's name and everything automatically. It uses Bonjour. If it doesn't, then maybe really that printer is so old it's not compatible. But it should. And then you press the add button. And Apple won't install drivers that aren't 64-bit. So if it installs those drivers, then it should work. It's really possible that it's such an old printer that it doesn't have 64-bit drivers. But I think it should. I don't think it's that old.
Not that old. Only 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's your wife, I hear.
It's my wife, yeah.
Yeah. So somebody in the chat room, Scooter X in the chat room, has gone to the HP site. He says it'll detect the OS and it will suggest HP Easy Start for Catalina version 2.91. So that should work. Have you done that?
No.
Let's see.
No. Your wife said no.
What should I do?
Your wife knows, Ron. Is that Ronita in the background? Your wife knows. So Melissa. Listen to Melissa. She knows what she's talking about. Yeah.
What should I do now? Go back to...
I would say the first thing I would do...
Yeah.
Make sure, and let me just confirm this. Are there other computers in the house that can print to that printer?
Yes.
So that printer, I just want to make sure the printer is on the network and working. It's just not working with that new iMac, but it works with everything else, right?
Okay.
Does it work with your iMac? She's got a laptop.
So that's the first thing to do is Melissa, print with your iMac just to see if that's working, because that'll verify that the printer's online and it's working, blah blah blah. Because that we got to make sure that that's the case. If it is, then the next step is to go into the Macintosh System Preferences. That's up there in the upper left-hand corner under the Apple menu, right?
Right. Okay, I see that.
Yeah, and then there's a printer icon. You go to that printer and scanner, System Preference pane. And what'll happen is it should see automatically the printer. First you probably have to press the plus button so that it'll search for the printer. And then it'll go out and it'll see all the printers that are on your network. If it doesn't see the HP, then there may be an issue, and that's when you go to the HP website and download their drivers. But if it sees it, you can click on it, and there's an add button will show up that you can then add that printer, and it should be able to print to that after that. Now, sometimes you can get a printer installed that doesn't work right. If you see it already installed, there's the next to the plus button, there's also a minus button. That'll remove the printer. Don't worry. It's not the end of the world. It won't break it. Then you can re-add it. And sometimes if a printer's not working right, re-adding the printer helps. So that might be the other thing to take a look at, is to re-add the printer. When you do it through the Apple System Preference pane, it's going to use the proper compatible drivers, and that's the key to the whole rigmarole.
A Dymo.
It sees your Dymo printer. Good. That's another printer in the house. It should see all of them. Have fun, you two. Looks like you're going to have a fun Sunday afternoon getting the printer working. Oh, so as I said, when stuff actually works out of the box, we all go, oh, wow, it does what it said it would do. Technology, it seems, works rarely, but that's what I'm here for. I hope you can get it working, Ron. It doesn't sound like a fun thing to spend a Sunday on. But it's only a couple of years old. It should absolutely work. It's just a matter of kind of trying all those things that I mentioned. I think Melissa heard. I think she can figure it out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. And Ron, we will also put a link to some help from HP in the show notes at techguylabs.com, because the chat room's coming up with a whole bunch of additional ideas. Or is it? Have you tried it? Are you doing it now? Or
I'm trying it right now. I'm trying to add and delete.
Cool. Yeah. Sometimes. So you did see it there, huh?
Yeah.
So maybe deleting it'll help. If that doesn't work, some printers, like I'm thinking my Epson, I would download the software from Epson because you get more features. Like, does your HP scan as well? Is it an all-in-one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes it's better to get all the software The Apple software will just install it as a printer. Sometimes they won't install it as a scanner, or they won't be the full set of tools. So sometimes it's better to go to HP. But see, at least see if Apple's software can get it working. Because if it can, then you know it works. Then it's just a matter of, this is kind of normal, by the way. Printers are, you know, notoriously finicky.
Yeah.
They're no fun. No fun at all. But I'm glad you got a new Mac. You like it?
So far, yeah, I really like it.
Oh, nice. It's, yeah, you deserve it. You deserve it. I told your wife you deserved it. You deserve it. You earned it.
Let's see. It's not working so far, but...
I hate computers. But it was so perfect when you said, and the it downloaded and all was there. It's like, when it works, yeah. It's like, wow. It's so funny when it all works. We're surprised. We're like, oh, yeah. Man, this thing actually worked. It so rarely does.
Yeah.
So rarely does. Anyway, I have to run, Ron, but good luck.
Okay.
All right. It was nice talking to you. Good luck. And keep at it. We'll put some stuff at techguylabs.com, too, that'll help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Lady Laura. Man, you're good, Lady Laura, our musical director. She goes back into the music library. It's way in the back of the station. The door's locked. It's dark back there. There's cobwebs, dusty. Nobody's been back there in years. She goes back there, brings a flashlight. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's the ghost of the 50s. DJs are still back there. That's it. She brings a flashlight. The light bulbs burn out for years. She goes back there. Whew. She looks. She found Long Toss Sally. Haven't played that in a while. Whew. Whew. Blows off the dust, brings it out. And then we get this great music. Thank you, Lady Laura. Appreciate it. Line four, Joe, Looking Glass, Oregon. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Ron.
You're on. You're on, baby. Come on now. Give me.
That's Leo with an R, right?
Rio. That's it. Yeah. Oh, man. Now, is Joe your proper name or is it Juan?
No, it's Juan with a Joe.
Spelled Juan, but it's pronounced Joe. Hello,
exactly.
Joe. Hello, Joe.
Lots of love out to Juan with an R.
Ron and Loretta. Oh, they were great, weren't they? I enjoyed it. And I caught her name wrong, too. I called her Melissa the whole time. What is wrong with me? Anyway.
I don't know. And it seems to be catching.
Yes, it's catching. But that's not a bad thing to get catched. You can catch other things. It wouldn't be so good. Yeah, there's a lot worse out there.
In this climate, absolutely.
So tell me about Looking Glass. Is that a nice area of Oregon? I like Oregon a lot.
It's a kind of a wide spot in the road. It's a T-intersection out here about 14 miles southwest of Roseburg.
It's got a nice name. I like it.
Well, the story is that the guy came over the mountains from Roseburg, and he looked out, and the whole valley was just shiny, and it was a looking glass.
How That's beautiful.
That's the story that I've heard.
That's, it also is true that it looks the same coming and going, right?
Yeah, I would guess so, yeah. I live actually halfway up a mountain on Sugar Pine Ridge.
Oh, man.
I'm a mile and a half from the nearest neighbor, and I have satellite really slow internet.
This is starting to sound like a Dolly Parton song here. Up on the ridge.
Well, we got her singing in the back over here.
Well, what can I do for you, Joe?
Well, I haven't called you since I lived down in L.A. a few years ago, and I was using my Windows Mobile 6 HTC Advantage.
Oh, I remember that phone. Oh, man. Yeah.
That was a great one. Wow. It finally died on me here a couple of years ago when I bought an HTC U11, which is a really nice phone.
I loved those. HTC really just, they went downhill fast, and they're now, of course, kind of history. But I loved those HTCs, yeah.
They had a really nice sync feature between Outlook and their phone.
Yeah.
And they stopped supporting it a while back, and then when the last update to Outlook came out, or not Outlook, Android came out, it killed their sync feature.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking for something that does a sync feature without having to put it onto the cloud. And I haven't found one yet.
So what do you want to sync with? Just the email or?
Just Outlook contacts, because that's what I've got.
Contacts. Normally people with Android phones will sync to Google contacts and it'll save it up to the Google. But you don't want anything to do with the cloud. You want to. And so it was syncing to your desktop computer. Is that how it was working?
Yeah, I have Windows 10 on my desktop, and I would, and even if I have to just plug it in and hit a button to make it happen, that's okay. It doesn't have to do it automatically. I just want to be able to go in. Right now, what I'm doing is individual contact cards.
Oh, that's a pain.
Yeah, when I change one or the other, I just either text it to me as an email, or I email it to the phone. And then
are you using Windows 10?
Yes. Yeah.
So there are third-party tools. There's one that's free, actually, that will sync Windows 10. It doesn't do it with Outlook, but it does it with the Windows 10 People, which is the contacts manager. And it's my guess Windows 10 People syncs with Outlook. Of course it does. So this would probably work for you. It's called SyncIOS, which is a bad name because it sounds like iOS, but it's not. It's for Android. SyncIOS Mobile Manager. It has a contact transfer tool that will automatically transfer everything. By the way, this works with any Android device, from your Windows 10 People app, which is your contact manager on Windows 10, into the Android. Does the whole thing. You don't have to do it card by card. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's syncios.com. And I bet you there's other tools that'll do this, but I think this is probably it's free, so there's an advantage to that. It's the simplest way to do it. And it should work with Outlook, because Outlook syncs with People. 8888-ASK-LEO. G. Scott, my buddy, on the line from Finland, Minnesota. Probably starting to look a little nicer in Minnesota these days. A little springy, right?
Greening up a little bit, yeah. The buds are popping out, yeah.
G. Scott gets out of Minnesota during the winter. He's a smart man, but it's nice to be back in the spring, I think.
Yeah, and I got a lot of work to do, so got to pay the bills.
Well, what can I do to help you?
You can help me.
Yeah.
Well, you're probably going to help me spend some money or some more money.
I'll try to spend as little money as I can.
Okay. So I got a ton of vinyl, and I'm going back to listening to records.
Fun.
Last we talked, I upgraded from my HD AV receiver to the 4K for the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And so I want to put that that HD receiver into play.
Okay.
I've got a TCL, 4K TV.
Nice.
So I'm thinking, if I optical out, can I feed like 5.1, and then
you bet.
And then stereo to the records.
Ah, from the TV? No, where? I don't understand what you're doing.
Okay, I got the AV receiver.
Yeah, so I see. I'm sorry.
4K.
Yeah.
Can I 4K the optical audio out? And then...
Where would you... You mean you want the optical from the TCL TV to go into the AV receiver? Is that what you're saying?
Right.
And yes, then, that'll work fine. And the AV receiver, okay. No, that's the best way to do it. And the AV receiver will decode it. If the TV sends out Dolby 5.1, the AV receiver will say, oh, yes, I understand that, and decode it properly. You'll have a setting on the AV receiver that says get the audio from the optical in. In fact, in my AV receiver, it's labeled TV audio.
Right, okay. And the reason I'm asking is...
The turntable, is it a regular turntable?
It's actually, I just purchased a new one. It's on its way. It's got USB go to MP3s, and it's got analog, so I can go to the stereo.
So I don't know if you remember back this far in the days of component stereo systems, but turntables had a weird output. They were unbalanced, ungrounded output. So you had to have a turntable in on the receiver to do it right. If your AV receiver has that, most do. A phono input. Okay. Then it has a preamp designed for a turntable. So you'll be able to plug that turntable into the back of it. It's not going to have 5-1 sound. It'll be stereo. You said that. And that's fine. It'll the AV receiver will know exactly what to do. It'll play it in the left and right channel only.
Okay. And then part of the reason this question came up was when I Googled bookshelf speakers, Edifier came up, and they've got powered speakers. And I know I can't do that without, you know, with the amp. So I've got line out, but I don't have line out.
You could one. You could do it with the amp, but it's excess. You know, it's another. It's two amps. So
yeah, okay, I'm getting too crazy. So
no, it'll work. It'll work fine. It's just that you don't need two amps. One of them you'll turn down a little bit, and you know you'll both right. be in sequence. But I don't think it'll break anything, and it won't make the sound any worse. It's just you've got two amplifiers going. Powered speakers right, have a built-in amp. More. That's why they have to be powered. Unpowered, the old-fashioned component stereo speakers, they just have speaker cable going off and plugging into the back of the AV receiver, get all their power from the AV receiver. So a lot of times nowadays, because computers, for instance, don't have amps, a lot of the speakers you'll see these days have built-in power. They have their own amplifiers built into the speaker.
Right, and that was, you know, that so that's going to save me $300.
You don't need the power. That's right, because the AV, as long as it's plugged into the AV receiver, that's doing the power. That's an amp.
Okay, then the one last final. The powered speakers had a planar, I think, speakers, the tweeters, versus the unpowered ones that I found, you know, first shot are a dome tweeter.
Ooh, okay.
Advantages?
Well, I don't know. Supposedly this magnetic planar technology sounds better. I have them on headphones. I really like how it sounds. I don't think you're going to notice in speakers. You know, I mean, if you got Bowers and Wilkins speakers, they'd have diamond dome tweeters. You know, it's just, it's all marketing. Who's making the speakers?
Well, Edifier came up. You know,
I would look at ELAC, ELAC.
Okay.
They make very affordable, but everybody agrees, very high quality speakers for just this purpose.
Okay.
Highly recommend them.
And going back 20 years when I was listening to vinyl before going on, I probably wasn't listening to planar anyway, so I'll probably
be
happy.
I mean, there's a lot. In theory, I think it's probably better. I don't know. I you and I are not teenagers anymore. I don't know if our ears could tell the difference. I don't know if they ever could. There's a lot of psychology in all of this, right? All of this marketing talk. I have to say, for headphones, I really like magnetic planar headphones. They seem to have an airier, more open sound. But remember, the speakers on the wall, they're much more influenced. The difference between the kinds of tweeters are going to be completely dwarfed by the difference in the shape of the room and the distance you are and all sorts of other stuff. It's a minor difference. That's why in headphones it might make more of a difference because it's right on your ear. I don't think on a speaker it's going to make that much difference. Is it a big difference in price?
I'm in a 120-year-old log cabin. So
yeah, you're going to be.
Probably anything.
Look at ELAC. I think everybody I talk to, including Scott Wilkinson, just raves about these. I think they've done a great job. I can't remember if this is the, I think it's Andrew Jones' company. I can't remember, but I think it is. Geez, just really, really nice speakers with a good price range. And they don't get all silly about diamond dome tweeters and all of that stuff.
Okay.
They just make good quality
marketing,
stuff.
Marketing, yeah. You know, I like to pay attention. You know, I can afford quality if I want, but I don't need this.
I think at our age, just a good, you know what, you're light years ahead of the kids who are listening on those little silly white Apple headphones to highly compressed AAC files off of a tiny little phone with a lousy A to D converter. I mean, honestly, or D to A converter, honestly, I think you're going to have a very nice setup. Listen to those beautiful Miles Davis. What are the records?
Oh, you know, big gamut. I go Santana to
nice.
David Allen Cole. Yeah.
Perfect. Love it. They're going to sound great. Thank you, G. Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. David Allen Coe wrote the perfect country song. I was drunk the day my mom got out of prison. Right? Am I right? Am I right? Then she got something about getting run over by a Daniel train.
Yeah. In fact, that one just came off my old turntable.
I love David Allan Coe, and I love Santana. You know, years ago bought a super duper high fidelity Blood, Sweat, and Tears LP, you know, vinyl LP. And I also had, I think, Born to Run or one of the Springsteen albums. And I don't know if they sound any better or not, but it sure is fun to put it on there. Do you have a disc washer so you can clean the discs?
I do. I've got a couple of them. And the thing about vinyl is it's the commitment. You know what I mean? You don't just put a playlist on for hours. Yes. Every 20 minutes, you have to decide what you're going to listen to.
I agree. And you listen to the whole song. I mean, the whole album. Absolutely. You don't listen to one song in the train. My kids, my daughter used to play 15 seconds of a song, then go to the next one. Commitment's a good word for it. And there's something very ritualistic in cleaning, putting 3 drops of cleaner on the disc washer and cleaning the album and carefully placing the needle on the first groove and all of that. I love that. That's aesthetic. I don't know if it sounds better, but it is. But you're exactly right. It's a commitment.
The ritual. And I went through the whole, I've got disc washer 1, 3, and 4. I don't know where my disc washer 2 went.
I only had the disc washer 3, I think.
Yeah.
I remember Roman numeral 3, right? Yeah.
Yep. And probably more marketing, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just a little piece of velvet on a wooden handle.
Yeah. I heard somebody talk about a lint brush was better than a disc washer.
Oh, I don't know.
I haven't gone there yet.
I don't know. Remember some of the turntables, they'd have a little brush in front of the needle. But I thought, man, if you have to have a brush in front of your needle, you're doing something wrong. You should not be picking up lint as it's playing your record. No. God, I remember those days. Every once in a while, I look at a turntable and think, maybe I should get one. I have an old JBL system that just begs to have a turntable connected. It has that phono input.
Mine come from the Modular Component Series. You'd buy them at JCPenney. I think it was a Technique manufacturer.
Techniques, yeah.
And, but now I'm upgrading. I got an Audio Technica coming.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, a buddy of mine out in Tahoe there before I came back here, we were listening to some tunes at his birthday party. And, this is really fun again, you know.
It is, and I think it's nostalgic for people of a certain age. It's how we grew up. It's how we listen to music.
Yep. No, I go back to the drop the album, my folks' console. You know, it had a spindle in the middle, and it would drop the next album. You could stack about 3-4 up.
Yep, yes. Boy, that was a terrible idea, but I remember that too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the automatic record player. Oh, man.
Yeah, so, but we've progressed beyond that. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And so I just like to say,
I would get those. I think you,
many times.
You owe yourself those ELAC speakers. I think you're going to really enjoy those. If I needed new speakers, I would for sure get ELACs. I've had my finger hovered over the buy button about a dozen times, but I can't justify it. I got to run. Take care, G. Scott. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Leo.
Thank you for letting me do my geeky thing here every weekend. I hope you'll come back next weekend. We'll talk again on the Tech Guy radio program. Last segment of the day. Let's go to line 2. Mark's been waiting very patiently in Panama City, Florida. Hello, Mark. Are you there?
Hello, Leo.
There you are. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm here. I have several Apple systems. I have the iMac 2012.
Okay.
And I have the Mac Mini 2018.
Ooh, you got the new one. Those are nice. Yeah, good choice.
Yeah, and then also I have the 2016 MacBook Pro.
Very nice.
And then also I have the new iMac 12-inch, or, yeah, iPad Pro 12-inch.
Well, you got a complete menagerie of equipment.
Yes.
You collected the whole set, as they say.
Yes, and then I have my first iMac that I bought in San Francisco back in, like, 2008.
Oh, I'm jealous. I remember buying my first iMac in 2004 when they first came out, the original, not iMac, the original Mac computer at Macy's. I remember going to the, because I had a Macy's card so I could charge it. It was $2,500.
Oh, wow.
It was a hard thing for me to buy back then in 1984, but I wanted that thing so bad, and I'd wanted a Lisa for years before that, and that was $10,000, so...
Yeah,
Steve was smart. He made me think I was getting a deal for $2,500. Anyway, you're obviously a longtime Mac lover.
Yeah, since 2008 or so.
Nice.
Before that, I was PC from like 84 to 2006 or so.
Yeah.
And then I say I swallowed the Kool-Aid and moved over to the dark side.
Yeah.
But I still do Windows every once in a while. So what I'm trying to do is I'm hoping to be able to take my Mac Mini and hook it up to either my MacBook Pro and use the display there or my iMac. But on my iMac,
you can't.
It has the old Thunderbolt.
You can't.
Yeah.
Because, you can't. You need to have a video in port on those devices, and Apple never did that. It's weird. I have a Lenovo all-in-one in the other room here that has an HDMI port, and there's a little button next to it that says in or out. So you could use it as a TV set, or you could use it to output to a screen. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, that's wild, because most of the time, and certainly no Apple product that I know of, allows you to do that. You could take the iMac apart, and I guess, and take the screen out and buy some additional circuitry and turn it into a monitor. But I don't, let me just see if anybody's turn an iMac into a monitor. I guess you can do that, but it's going to take some hardware hacking.
Yeah, and so, also when I was used to, when I had the 2000.
Wait a minute. I'm going to apologize and take it back. You can view the desktop of your Mac on the display of some iMac models. This is from Apple, using something called Target Display Mode. I had never heard of this. It is not supported on iMacs before the Retina display, so it's a limited number of them. But I'm going to put a link to the, or just Google support.apple.com, and this article is Use Your iMac as a Display. I apologize. I had no idea, but it does, in fact, on some iMacs, have the ability. Basically, you'll use the Thunderbolt cable between each, the Mac Mini and the iMac, and then press Command F2 on the iMac, Command F2, and it will suddenly turn into a display.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, it's a limited number of iMac models that will do this. I don't know if yours will, but this is Target Display Mode, and you just do a Google search, and you can see the Apple article. You said your iMac is 2012?
Yeah, I'm looking at the...
The 2012 iMac supports it.
That's late 2012.
Yeah. iMacs from mid-2011 to mid-2014 support Target Display Mode. I apologize. I got that completely wrong. I'd never heard of this. I'll be diggity danged. I just did a little Google. Use an iMac with a Thunderbolt as an external display.
Yeah. I also ran into a guy. You're talking about your satellite internet.
F2. Yeah.
Mike Winland. And there's also another guy called, they call him Camp Scott. And both of those are big RVers.
Yeah. Oh, they're when they do satellite internet, they're using either the Hughes, the DirecTV, or Exceeds WildBlue. They're using one of the, existing satellite providers. This is not what Starlink is. Those guys, you know, they have satellites up there for television, and so they said, well, you could also use it for internet, but it's got all sorts of issues. It's expensive, it's slow, and it's got a lot of latency, a ridiculous amount of latency. That's not what Elon's trying to do. He's got low Earth orbit satellites, and that's why he's launching dedicated satellites. He's going to launch 12,000 of them before this is done to provide internet. That's a very different thing. Faster, lower latency. I mean, it's unproven. And that's what the FCC is kind of saying as well. We'll believe it when we see it. But it's an interesting idea. Very different from what RVers are using today with their DirecTV dishes or their Hughes dishes or their Exceed dishes. Last caller of the day. It's going to be Jeff from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Leon. Thank you very much. Very short. I'm in an apartment complex that only has Comcast.
Oh, I hate them too. Oh.
And I hate to give them any more money.
I know.
I've got an air antenna, and I get sporadic in and out. Is there a better antenna that I can buy?
Yeah, probably. So I'm going to send you to two different websites. The best TV deal out there, of course, is free over-the-air TV. And by the way, it's HD. It's high def. And it's free. But you got to have the right antenna. You have to be close enough to the towers and so forth. So there are two really useful sites. There's one called Antenna Web. And this comes from the Consumer Electronics Association. It's antennaweb.org. And they talk about antennas. And this, you can put in your zip code. It'll tell you what kind of antenna is going to be best for your neighborhood and for the TV stations that are in your neighborhood. Because, you know, they're on different frequencies and there's a variety of technical issues. Antenna Web can explain that. There's also a great site called TV Fool at tvfool.com. You'll enter in your address. It'll tell you what you should be able to receive and what kinds of antennas you'll need. Both of those sites are very useful for doing what you want to do, which is cut the cable bill and start getting the best deal in TV, which is free over-the-air TV, like it used to be. You know, Channel 2, 4, 5, 7, those guys. Well, that about does it for me. I've had a wonderful time. I hope you stay safe, stay healthy, and come back next week. We will talk about tech. Things change all the time. That's one of the fun things about this job. It's the toy store, but it's important, too, because we're covering things that are changing the way we live, work, play, worship. I hope you come back next week. Join me, Lady Laura, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. We're going to have a good time. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What do I say every time? Yeah, have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.